You know what really makes us mad? Is wasting money on CDs with only one or two good songs.
Yeah. Tell them about punk!
What's up, posers? Welcome to Punk Lotto Pod. I'm your co-host, Justin Hensley.
I'm your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
And this is the show where we choose one year at random and select one punk, hardcore, emo, or punk-adjacent album from that year for us to discuss. No guest today, which means I assigned Dylan the year, which it was funny because when we were talking about, like, okay, we're going to be solo this week, so I guess we just need to cover something that we haven't covered a lot. So I was like, let's look at the 70s. We haven't done the 70s since the Iggy Pop and the Stooges 50th anniversary, which that was in February. And then we probably haven't done the 70s since, what, maybe Talking Heads? I'd have to go back and dig. But so I was like, okay, let's do the 70s. And I was thinking I was going to be the one to choose because you chose the last one with the sidekicks. And then you're like, give me a year. And I was like, okay, here you go. Which you came up with a better idea than what I probably would have wound up saying anyway, so...
Yeah, we are doing the 70s. We're going to 77, the year punk exploded. We don't know how to intro the show by ourselves.
Well, speaking of 1977, if you go to our Patreon, you get access to all of our weekly bonus audio, where we just covered the documentary Punk in London, made in 1977. It's a little bit of a looking at what it was like in the punk scene in 1977 with some interviews and performances, and you can hear us talk about it over there. Off the top, it's not very good. So
listen to us talk about it instead of watching it for yourselves.
Yeah, it's shorter to listen to us talk about it than to watch that documentary. You also get access to all of our weekly Friday new release bonus audio where I talk about 4 to 5 albums that came out that day. There won't be a new one of those this week, because I'm graduating, but we will have a new episode of You Lost Me There with Paul DiCiccio of Tor Johnson Records talking about Boy Sets Fire. So if you want to hear that, head on over there. You can also watch the Moon Pies for Misfits videos where I tried the new Mountain Dew Summer Freeze. And I found, oh, there's a new Red Bull that I tried too. It's called Juneberry, which I need to post that one for everyone to watch. And oh, today I actually got a Faygo firework. So Faygo is releasing their Bomb Pop flavor this year too. So go get that. I've tried that one before, so I didn't make a video for it. But Faygo firework, better than Mountain Dew Summer Freeze. I don't know if that's a hot take, but it tastes more like a Bomb Pop than the Mountain Dew one does. And also, if you're in the Patreon, you get access to our Discord. Get in there and chop it up with fellow listeners of the show and past guests as well. Friends of the show, Dave Brown, Jason W. Who else we got? Good friend Corey's in there. Me and Dylan. All sorts of people are in there. So go join that. If you can't get your account activated once you join Patreon, I'll send you an invite too, so in case you miss it that way. But and we will be adding a $5 tier soon. Once I figure out how to live stream, I think we'll launch that with our new producer credit tier and access to live streams. And yeah. Oh, you can also do the $10 tier where you choose the album that we talk about on the show. We did a couple of those recently. Those are always really fun. It's a one-time $10, and you choose whatever album you want to talk about. And yeah, those are really fun. So patreon.com/punklottopod, and you can follow us on all the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at punklottopod, punklottopod@gmail.com, and our voicemail line 202-688-PUNK. That should be all the plugs out of the way. But yeah, so 1977. A year that we've covered a couple times.
Yeah, I figured going into this one, I was probably not going to pull punches on my selection just because the last two or three times we've done the 70s, it's just been the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
No one really wants to ever do the 70s. Guests don't really want to, which is understandable to a point, but there are some really significant, important records that I feel like people are forgetting they could potentially choose to talk about. So I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. We don't talk about the 70s that often because guests don't typically say, I want to talk about albums from the 70s. Because I usually ask, it's like, what era are you most interested in talking about? I don't want to give somebody who's like, I don't know, I don't really know any of these bands, you know. And make them like pick something they don't really care to talk about. That was the old format of the show where we made people talk about records they didn't care about.
Yeah. It was kind of a struggle.
Yeah. But so we don't, people don't pick the 70s very often. We don't choose the 70s very often because there's not a lot in those years. So you're going to like burn through them very quickly if you do it a lot. And because if you look at it now, we've already done 77 four times prior. But way back, episode 27, we did The Jam, This Is the Modern World.
This is a modern world!
Along with The Carpets, Radio Wunderbar, in our old album and an EP format. Then in episode 46, we covered The Boys and their self-titled album, as well as Squeeze and their EP Packet of Three, where we discovered, oh no, Squeeze is the band who did that Tempted song that we hate.
Tempted by the fruit of another.
Then in episode 86, we covered the FU2 and their album Punk Rock. With Scott Fuger of Fly on the Call podcast, FU2. What band was it? The Comsat Angels? Was that who it was? No, it was the Downliner Sect. It was members of the Downliner Sect doing a punk cash-in record. Very strange album. And then it took us a while. Then we came back in episode 179 with The Clash and their self-titled album, The Clash. So we fit it four times. We managed to balance out the obscure to recognizable records. On those, I guess, you know, The Jam and The Clash being the biggest two. And I still can't get over, people do not like This Is the Modern World. They think it's the worst Jam record. And I'm like, it's good. I don't understand what you people want, which kind of ties in today. But before we get into the albums that we're talking about today, because we're doing something a little different, which you've already seen by the episode title. But what were you also thinking about talking about from 1977?
So I spent a good time. I have spent a substantial amount of time on 77. Regular listeners of the show are maybe familiar with my sister year calendar, repeating calendar system of listening to music. Last year corresponded with 77 as far as a calendar that you could reuse where the days and dates would line up to be the same. So I listened to a lot of stuff from 77, and I did kind of, towards the end of the year, I made a special effort to listen to most, if not everything, that falls on the top 40 albums for punk. If you go to the second page, it drops off a cliff.
Yeah.
There's so much obscure stuff on there pretty much immediately. So you really don't need to pay attention to much past the first page and Rate Your Music of punk. So I have a pretty good opinion of just about all of the significant albums, notable exceptions, you know, like I didn't listen to that Screwdriver record for obvious reasons. And there's some stuff that I kind of just deemed as being like, this is a Rate Your Music wants to call it punk because it's weird thing that I just kind of skipped. So it was like, well, there's a lot of potential to choose from. Like I know that there are some underrated records from this year, but I wanted to talk about something that would be of the most interest to probably to both of us. And my first three choices were what we're talking about today and Talking Heads 77, Psycho Killer, which you reminded we had just done a Talking Heads record. So I was like, all right, well, this is when I'll leave for us to pick in the future or for a guest to maybe choose.
Yeah, we did more songs. I actually had that just pulled up not too long ago. We covered more songs
less than a year ago, right?
Yeah, it would have been June of last year. So just under a year ago. So June 22nd is when we covered that. So, I mean, I guess we could have done it again, but I don't know. I think we could. There's more, I think, to say.
Yeah.
With more time.
Yeah, I figured we would skip that one because there's stuff here that was we really haven't talked about on any major episodes in depth, or at least it's been a really long time. One of the records I was very close to picking that I thought would be interesting as a pretty off the beaten path selection and really kind of a punk adjacent record, but Motorhead's self-titled. Was a very big high top contender for me.
Yeah.
Because that's a kick-ass record. The title track, Vibrator, Iron Horse, Born to Lose, The Watcher. It's a really good record. And something that I think would be interesting to talk about in the way that it kind of is a metal punk hybrid in a way that is very unique in all of music history. There's very few bands that are this equally divided between punk and metal. And this record in particular, I feel like Motorhead are at their punkest.
Yeah. Yeah, this would be a fun one to do. And I really considered it, too. I was like, that would be fun to do. Talk about Motorhead. It would be the freshest thing that we talked about because we've never done Motorhead, really, outside of an I'm Listening. I considered that, but I also was like, is this the record to do? Maybe it's the one to do because it might be the most punk. But I guess if you're wanting to like hit a big Motorhead album, you'd probably go with Ace of Spades or Overkill, you know?
Yeah.
I will mention that our friend Dave Brown just did an episode not too long ago about Motorhead for his podcast, One Band, Five Songs. Definitely worth checking that one out. And I think Dave is also like a early Motorhead listener as well. He's not so much into the later stuff.
Yeah. Otherwise, things that kind of blipped on my radar, I figured you wouldn't really want to talk about a Suicide record.
No.
That's a me choice, not an
I've
us.
Tried to listen to that record too before, and I cannot get into it at all. Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. Yeah, it's a tough one for me.
Yeah, it's a mood record for sure. It is. It's not an everyday record for me. Kind of thought about Young, Loud, and Snotty by the Dead Boys. But in listening to it last year, I was kind of disappointed in it, actually.
Hmm.
It's a tiny bit overrated.
Hmm. It's been a couple years since I listened to it, but the last time I listened to it, I was like, this is kick-ass record. So we might have differing tastes on that one.
It starts really strong and it ends really strong. It's pretty weak around the middle from what I can remember of it. There's some sameness, some kind of annoying parts.
There's a lot of stuff here that I feel like we will be dipping on a band that we've covered before, like Wires, Pink Flag, you know, absolutely massive post-punk record, basically invented the genre. But we just did 154 not too long ago.
Yeah, we just did the Stooges, so I really felt like none of the three Iggy Pop records that came out this year, they weren't high on my list.
Yeah, because he released The Idiot and Lust for Life and that album with Jim from the Stooges.
Yeah.
Kill City, James Williamson.
Yeah. All three are good. All three are worth talking about. I am a passenger. Would be interesting to do all three in one episode. There's actually kind of a few options from 77 that are like that because there's two Ultravox records. Which would be a band I would need to do a lot more research on, but they are good. I've heard those records. There's two Jam records.
We covered in This Is the Modern World already, so we would need to do In the City, the first record. In our city, there's a thousand things
I want to say to you. Yeah, which that's a record you can very easily do on its own, I feel like.
Yeah.
There's Rocket to Russia and Leave Home by the Ramones. Both records you could easily talk about separately from each other,
mm-hmm.
but both inform each other in ways that could be discussed in a single episode. I mean, honestly, if you wanted, you could do Television's Marquee Moon. Same episode as Blank Generation by Richard Hell. I feel like those are complimentary records. I belong to the blank generation and I can take it or leave it each time. But again, both records you could talk about on their own.
We covered the back in our old format where we did EPs, we talked about a Richard Hell EP that also had like all the songs were on Blank Generation. So that's kind of been, even though that was like episode 4, because we did that with the Ramones' first record, I've been like, but we kind of covered this record. I mean, I would like to do it again, I guess, eventually, but
yeah,
still feels too soon. 5 years later, still feels too soon.
But
yeah, God, there's a lot of double records. There's two Runaways albums, Queens of Noise, as well as Waiting for the Night. Oh,
I was going to say those, both of those Runaways records are great. I think I prefer Queens of Noise. That's the better one. Probably the best Runaways record. Maybe that's a hot take.
I don't know. I don't know what is people consider like the best Runaways record. They always seem like a band that people would only care about songs from.
Yeah, they are very much a singles band, but Queens of Noise is probably the most consistent album.
I mean, so when you were originally saying like, let's go for it because guests don't want the 70s, so let's hit some, knock some big ones out of the park. And I was, if it was me picking, I would have actually strongly considered Nevermind the Bollocks. Just to do it, one, to knock such a massive record out of the way, but also to reevaluate it, because it's been a long time since I've listened to the album. And regardless of what you think of the individual members of the band or what the Sex Pistols kind of mean to punk and UK punk and stuff like that, it is a good record, maybe overrated. And so revisiting it, I would like to kind of like figure out what's actually here. Is it, what is there, any there, you know, to use that phrase.
I guess there's still room for this conversation in the future, because either you and I are just going to do it ourselves or a guest is finally going to pick this record. But my very quick Cliff's Notes version of this record is, it is good. I would cut God Save the Queen and Anarchy in the UK from it, because the overexposure drags the record down of those songs. And I would cut Bodies.
Really?
Because I fucking hate them. I don't. Bodies is the weird abortion song, right?
Yeah, that you can't tell which side he stands on.
Mm-hmm. You could tell.
You could tell now.
You could tell then.
We'll get to it.
Mummy, I'm an abortion. Yeah. Shut up, Johnny. It's not for you to weigh in. I would cut those three songs, and you got a really good record.
Because it's like 20 minutes long.
Still pretty long, honestly, because it's 38 minutes. So if you take the 9 minutes of those three songs away, you've got like a 29 minute record.
Yeah.
And a good one at that, because I think it's all like killer material. Even the songs that you don't know as well, that are a little bit more forgettable, they still have like a great riff. You still have Steve and Paul doing all of the heavy lifting. And you also have Johnny's more tolerable performances before he realized, oh, I can do that, which is all Anarchy in the UK and God Save the Queen are. They're just that Johnny voice. That's my short version. That's an album we could honestly go song by song.
Yeah, that would be one that you would want to, just because it's so big. There's a handful of albums out there that you would want to take the song by song approach to. And yeah, that would be a good one to do. Well, so we got a first here, kind of first. We're going to tackle two albums. We've done podcasts where we covered multiple albums, but not doing like full in-depth digs on both records. We used to do the old format where we did the album and EP. But this is two LPs. We're doing two LPs released both in 1977. And we are talking about The Damned. And we're talking about both Damn Damn Damn, their debut album, as well as their immediate follow-up, Music for Pleasure, both released in 1977. So let's try to decide. Should we intro the first record, or should we talk about your decision to do both first?
Let's do the decision to do both.
Okay. So why are we talking about both records at the same time?
So we're talking about both of these records because Damn Damn Damned initially jumped out to me on its own as one of the first three selections that I made, that I was like, these are the records that I would be most inclined to talk about. Because Damn Damn Damned, incredible record, massive record, a band that we've done one album by them on the show before, and it's a goth record. You know?
Yeah, Phantasmagoria, we covered that. And then I've recently covered Darkadelic, their brand new record, on a New Release Friday bonus audio, but that's like 5 minutes talking about the one record.
So we've talked about The Damned mostly in passing and not their most representative material. You know, I did a minute on Machine Gun Etiquette on our 100 and 100.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's been a very big band that we've kind of glossed over. This is one of those records, if you're like, that's the one. I think they kind of have three albums that might fall into that those categories. So while we were talking about it, the idea of also talking about Music for Pleasure kind of popped up. And I was like, you know, Music for Pleasure is a record that I think should be talked about. But when else are you going to talk about it? You know, it's not a record that really anyone's ever going to pick. And I think it's a record that you have to talk about within the context of their career. So I kind of figured, it was like, well, when else would we do it? It's right there. It makes for a very interesting kind of compare and contrast opportunity. It's something we've never really done before. So why not do both?
Yeah. When you brought that up, I was like, that's actually a really good idea. And we haven't really done anything like that before. So I'll try it out, you know. And also, no one's going to pick Music for Pleasure by itself. Even if you and I were to get to it, there's a bunch of other stuff we would get to before that one, especially if we'd already done Damn 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 at that point. So it kind of just makes sense to do them together because, you know, it all happened within the same year. And it represents a very specific time period in The Damned that is pretty much over after this year. So, well, we're going to take them each one album at a time. So let's start with Damn Damn Damned by The Damned. Let's do some stats. The Damned are from London, England. They formed in 1976, and this is their debut full-length album. It was released February 18th, 1977, on Stiff Records. And the personnel on this album is Captain Sensible on bass, Rhett Scabies on drums, Brian James on guitar and vocals, and Dave Vanian on vocals. And the album was produced by Nick Lowe. Do you want to go... Let's continue the stats, shall we? So the Damned have the notoriety of being a band of firsts. They released the first single, New Rose, the first UK punk single. They released the first punk LP with Damn Damn Damn. They went on the first major tour with Mark Bolan of T-Rex.
Yeah.
They went on the first US tour. So The Damned have so many of the firsts. And I feel like they get ignored.
Yeah.
Despite just being like, and the damned put out new rows before the pistols. And that was like always what everybody always said. And they never really like talked. They talked about new rows and they showed the video of them, you know, playing in that room spray painted. And then they move on and don't talk about the damned again.
Yeah. So I said the damned kind of have three albums, you know, that would be the one to talk about. Yeah, for some reason, I feel like they aren't talked about. I mean, they are talked about. I don't want to say that they're not. I feel like in terms of the pantheon of UK punk, though, despite being firsts in all of these ways, they are glossed over. There's not a lot of depth in reviewing them and talking about them and their importance and what they influenced. I think their influence is very important, but not well identified and not well discussed. They are very unique sounding too. And I think that they get the things that overshadow the damned historically, maybe two significant factors, two or three significant factors. While they were first, they're immediately overshadowed by the Clash and the Sex Pistols going massive, being these huge bands immediately after them. They also get a little bit overshadowed or maybe get lost in the mix by the kind of tumultuous first couple of years of their career, where they essentially break up after 77 and reunite. So they kind of have a stagger. They don't have the momentum that someone like The Clash has, you know, where The Clash, they get huge and then they just keep going until they finally stop in, you know, in the 80s. But, you know, they only get bigger and bigger. And the Damned get bigger, you know, after reuniting, they do get bigger. But then the ways in which they get bigger are kind of by detaching themselves from their origins and changing their sound and especially leaning into their image as kind of a goth band. And people don't, I think a lot of punks in particular don't care for the goth stuff as much. And kind of it maybe tarnishes their legacy, though I think that's an unfair assessment because I think that they did that stuff in ways that were unique to them. But it's not, you don't have that through line of if you put on Damn Damn Damned and you listen to this record and then you go listen to anything, Phantasmagoria, you know, it's hard to tell that it's the same band. And there are significant reasons for that, which we can get into. But, you know, Dave being the most consistent through line and even his vocal performance on like Damn Damn Damned is not quite what he's known for later. He just kind of has that Dracula voice to begin with.
Yeah. So I have a little bit on their formation in the beginning stuff. So Dave, Captain Sensible, and Rat Scabies were all in a band prior to the Damned called the Masters of the Backside, which also featured Chrissy Hynde of the Pretenders, which was, I thought was a very odd collection of musicians. Brian was in a band called London SS with Mick Jones of The Clash and Tony James of Generation X. And Brian and Rat Scabies, they wanted to start a new band, kind of as just like a, I don't know, let's try something different. I don't know what their reasoning behind starting new bands while they were in bands was, but I guess those bands weren't really going anywhere. And they had invited Sid Vicious and Dave Anion to audition for vocals. Only Dave showed up. Sid did not show up. So Dave got the job. And then they added Captain Sensible to the band, and so they are now formed. Their very first show is opening for the Sex Pistols. I think they're one of the bands, they're part of that wave of bands that it's, what is it, that Manchester show that the Ramones played that every UK punk was at and all started bands? Isn't that how that story goes?
They were all either there or they all claimed to have been there.
Yeah, yeah. And every person there started a new band, you know. The Pistols were already like a thing before the Damned put their first single out. They just were faster at getting a single out than them. And I think that's why it's always soured the Pistols. They've always been like, they beat us to it. It's like, well, if you weren't fucking around so much, then maybe you could have put something out too. They went on tour with the Sex Pistols, later on the Anarchy in the UK tour, and then were kicked off by Malcolm McLaren. I couldn't find a reason why they were kicked off of the tour. My guess is they were better.
Yeah. I was going to say, they were probably too good, and the Sex Pistols were not good.
Yeah.
On tour, they were struggling, and he was probably like, yeah, you can't be up here upstaging my headliner.
So they went and recorded this record with Nick Lowe, and who at this time he had worked with producing Elvis Costello and Reckless Eric's music, as well as Dr. Feelgood. He had some singles out himself, and so it was just kind of a natural, you know, relationship. Nick worked with Stiff Records a lot. They were on the label. Let's work, you know, let's do the record together. And it charted at number 34 on the UK album charts. Seems low, doesn't it?
34 UK album charts.
Whenever we're talking about punk is like the biggest thing in the world right now. I don't know. I
don't know enough about UK charts. I don't know what was on the UK charts at the time.
Definitely Pistols and Clash would have outcharted them, though.
Yeah.
Because the Clash put out their album the same month.
Yeah.
As Damn Damn Damn. So they're very close. Meanwhile, like the Pistols, don't they wait till like August or something to put that record out? But they were being like, they were dropped by labels and had to find new labels and probably actually record the damn thing, which seemed like the lowest priority to them.
Well, and it, you know, never mind, the Bullocks wasn't really recorded all in one go, and they have the membership change during the process of recording the record, and you know, Steve has to record all of the bass parts practically.
Because they kick Glenn out. And
yeah.
Side note, Glenn Maverick put out a record last week. So I don't know. I don't know what's on it, what it is. But it's very funny that Glenn's putting out a solo record like nearly 50 years later.
Yeah. Bullocks came out in late October. So.
Yeah. OK.
Really behind. I don't know if the Damn Damn Damned charting, that maybe makes sense. You know, there's so much of punk being such a hot thing was the media circus, was the, this is the new scary thing that's happening in youth culture that we need to report on. And so there was definitely a lot of attention on punk, but it maybe took some time to really start to actually sell. But, you know, it sold enough to chart. So. Those are significant enough numbers, I think, pretty early for a band's first album, especially on a kind of small label.
Yeah, Stiff formed in like 76.
Yeah.
Like it was a new label. It was to cash in on the punk explosion. And that's why you get Dr. Feelgood record. I don't know. So, yeah, Damn 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 is their first LP and features the massive, massive, massive New Rose first punk UK single. I have what I'm now considering top tier tunes. These are songs that are probably the greatest songs ever written, and I would consider New Rose as well as Neat 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 to be both top tier punk tunes, two of the greatest punk songs literally ever written.
Yeah, those are perfect songs.
Yeah.
Perfect. They've got such killer hooks. They've got such high energy. Just a blast to listen to. Don't ever, ever get old.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to Neat 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 and New Rose for 15 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not like all the time, but they haven't suffered from overexposure in the way that, you know, like some of the Sex Pistols stuff that I mentioned, or even some Ramones stuff.
Yeah.
Has been like, I don't need to hear Blitzkrieg Bop again. I'm always game to hear New Rose, Neat Neat Neat. I think those are killer songs.
Is she really going out with him?
Yeah, it's the way I look at this record is from from front to back, I consider this a classic album. Like, just if you're like, give me the essentials of 77, this would be a record that you go, here you go. You got to hear this one. You got to hear the two Ramones records. You might have, I guess if we have a short list of records that you have to give someone to try, this would be one of them. I would give them this record, the Sex Pistols, one of the Ramones records, probably the Clash first record. And let's do five records total. And maybe I give them, I'm blanking, what else came out that year? Talking Heads, I guess, depending on how punk we're talking, you know. But I don't think it's a perfect record. It's one of those ones where it's like, it's a brilliant album. And I guess having two tracks that are considered like all-time greatest songs definitely elevates you to a new level. But there are also some really, truly great songs on here too that I don't think are considered automatic classics. But I would put Stab Your Back, See Her Tonight, and So Messed Up as like the next level down from like a classic tune.
Interesting. See Her Tonight, kind of underrated. I would put Fan Club up there. Born to Kill.
I like Fan Club a lot. And when I look at this record, I go, no bad songs. There's no bad songs. So that automatically puts it in like great category. I think Born to Kill might be one of my least favorite. Maybe Born to Kill or Fish. They're not bad. If I had to like pick and choose songs, those are probably towards the bottom of my list. Fan Club's pretty high up there, though.
It's got that riff. That killer riff,
which has like a Munsters sort of feel to it too. Like, it makes you think of them.
I really like Born to Kill. Now I'm bone to kill. It's like a fall song almost.
I really enjoy Feel the Pain, which has like that. It's like that creepy song that makes me think of the more goth material they would do later. Like, it feels like a song on the Black Album or Strawberries.
Yeah. Yeah, there really are hints of the goth material that they would explore later, early, from the beginning. Because even, you know, Fan Club, Born to Kill, you know, they have those, like, spooky kind of, you know, sensibilities. And that like, the Damned are fun in the way that they do these kind of creepy, edgy songs that feel fun and campy at the same time. And they don't have to go as far as, like, you know, Danzig singing really repulsive things. they're not trying to be shocking. They're just dark themes.
But even then, they're not even that dark, really.
No.
Lyrically. Yeah. There's not a bad song on here, so it automatically gets a solid A for an album, you know, release. And then, like, the frosting on the cake that turns it into something unique and special would be those handful of, like, truly outstanding songs. Because, really, if you had a whole record of, like, I Fall or one of the two quality songs, you would go, that's a pretty good record. Like, if that's just, like, the best, you know, the same level of quality that the whole record has, you would still go, that's a good album. But because you have all these like really special elements going into it, Dave as a vocalist is one of the best singers in punk, like, period. Even back here when he's just still more of just kind of yelling, he has a very strong presence in all of his songs. He's not buried in any way. He has enough unique qualities to his voice that make him a one-of-a-kind singer. Like, I would put him... Because, like, what does the guys from The Boys sound like? What is his voice, you know?
Yeah.
What do Eater and The Outsiders, like, what do they sound like vocally, you know? They all probably have, like, a not-as-good Johnny Rotten voice. It's kind of, like, not as sneering, not as gritty.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you've got, like, Paul Weller. The Jam, he's got a low voice, you know, and Johnny Rotten's voice is unique in the sense of what he's doing with it. He's definitely doing different things, kind of destroying his voice, which I think him turning into a robot singer in Public Image Limited was him pivoting to save his voice almost.
Yeah.
And I hear the hints of Joey Ramone and Dave Style. Like, the Damned are a band who make me think they were listening to U.S. music. They were listening to well, the Stooges, because they covered I Feel All Right by the Stooges on here. They also, I think, have cited the MC5 as influences. They're one of the Damned are one of the bands who were supposedly at the Ramones show, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. The MC5 influences is huge. They would cover them later, but they latched on to that drumming, that fast drumming from the MC5.
Those tom fills on all over this record. Rhys Scabies called himself the fastest drummer in England, I think, was what he used to call himself, which fair based on what we've heard in recordings. They did. They had the speed that the Pistols aren't that fast when you really think of them. The Jam are pretty fast, but they're also playing the Who and mod rock stuff with just a punk edge.
Yeah, and the Jam aren't nearly as driving fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not straight eights. There's a bounce to it. There's a little, they've got that da-da kind of, a little more jangliness to it. They're fast and they're tight for sure, but yeah, they don't have the insane like Rhys Scabies is just such a perfect like textbook. I feel like it's like if you think of what all out punk drumming is, Rhys Scabies is that drummer, and I think he's that drummer who is a massive influence on American hardcore, and I think that's one of the things that the Damned really should be talked about, is how important they are to what would be ultimately the next wave of punk, because US bands were absolutely listening to these Damned records.
I did read a quote that I forget who it was by, but they said that the Damned playing in LA, it may be one of the biggest contributing factors to American hardcore in Los Angeles specifically.
Yeah.
Because they also played faster live. They were like the Ramones. They played the songs way faster.
Yeah.
So, like, these songs are already fast. Just imagine, like, how fast Nee Nee Neat or Stabber Back or New Rose would be. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. If the Ramones, you know, launched all of those British punk bands, the Damned launched a lot of American hardcore bands.
Yeah. Yeah. These songs are amazing. Like, just, like, my lowest rating on here is a 3.75, you know. Everything else is four and above. Two 5.0 songs on here. I rarely have that many, you know. And it's just cool. They just sound so cool. Like the guitar, Brian James's guitar work is so underrated, I think. He is such a cool guitar player. Very clearly influenced by like the Stooges and MC5 and the way he does his leads and everything like that. There's even like solos on some of these songs. And it's so funny to think of Captain Sensible as a bass player, because that's all he was in the band at this point. But he's the first thing you hear on the record. The way Need starts with his like, just like this amazing.
Which is like, is just like kind of making another American hardcore influence. Husker Du, starting out with the bass part on Zen Arcade on the first song.
And I don't feel like their influences are very, very British on this record. Like, there's a little mod, a little pub rock in here, but I don't know. I think they're leaning America whenever they're doing this stuff. They're writing these songs.
Yeah, and it's not in the usual way, because I don't think that they are doing the pub rock thing of, like, sped up R&B covers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These songs feel like they were influenced by, the Ramones, the Stooges, the MC5, even like American like garage rock bands and surf and stuff like that. I mean, you could make the Kinks connections, so there's a little bit more of your British influence, but that's probably the Kinks are like the bigger and a little bit of the Who are like the bigger British influences that you can kind of hear in what they're doing. But I mean, they were also listening to I feel like the Damned were also listening to like the Doors, which becomes more apparent on later records. But
yeah. Do you remember the first time you listened to the Damned outside of just hearing like New Rose?
Not really. I don't remember specifically listening to this record.
I couldn't figure it out either. Like I was thinking of when I would have heard it for the first time, probably in college. It seems like the first time I heard a lot of UK punk albums in the entirety. I would have been like watching those random UK documentaries about punk but I wouldn't have had like a full listen to them. I did buy, I think I did have the Sex Pistols CD before I went to college, but yeah, I never owned a physical copy of this record, and I guess I don't know when I would even really like dug into them too much as well. Like they're just someone I've picked, some band that I picked up along the way and just enjoyed. I've probably heard every LP with the exception of maybe like Grave Disorder or like one of the reunion records, like the 90s, 2000s reunion records. I may not. Why So Paranoid, I think, is that one. I've heard songs from them, but I don't think I've ever listened to them all the way through. But other than that, I've heard all the classic records. I've heard everything through the 80s. I've heard the last two new records they did. So yeah, I don't know, remember when I picked them up, but I've just been digging into their discography for a while now. And like I said, there's stuff I still haven't heard yet, so.
1, 2, 3, oh, she's so messed up. She don't even fall. Oh, but she's so messed up. She has no fun at all. She's a sad case. A pretty moon. I'll be the lie. We'll grab a fucker on mom. Oh, yeah, her face is such a mess. The best thing she can do is.
How highly do you rate this album in the 77 pantheon?
I would say it's probably third.
Oh, wow.
I think it's probably my top three. I would say Leave Home by Ramones, Marquee Moon by Television, and this. And then I would put like Talking Heads 77 and Pink Flag after it to round out the top five. But
you know, it's weird. I don't know if this cracks my top five. I think I like, there's two Ramones records, so it's kind of unfair, but I feel like they do take both spots, Leave Home and Rocket to Russia. I put Talking Heads in there. I put Marquee Moon in there. I would need to do like a back-to-back on the Jam records to see if I would put both above this one or just one of them. If it's in the top five, it's number five, personally. I think I just like their other material so much more, their later material so much more. Some of the like middle tracks on this record just don't do as much for me. And maybe it's because it doesn't really feel like the Damned yet. I don't think they really feel like that until Machine Gun Etiquette. Because I think the Machine Gun Etiquette through Strawberry's Run is probably their best string of records for me, personally.
I think this record just has such a cool energy. Mm-hmm. Like from the album cover, that bright yellow.
Them covered in pie.
Yeah.
Because it was, they do tell a story about like the guy who designed that cover. He thought he was going to be like making them mad by doing it. Like, this will put them off. And then like they came in and they had a blast with it. Even though the Captain Sensible was like, I got way more on my face than everybody else did.
The whole sound and vibe of the record, and really just the consistency throughout it. It's one of the easiest records to revisit from this year. It's definitely pretty far up there. On your which Jam record would you rank higher? Note, going back to what we said earlier, hot take: This Is the Modern World is the better.
People hate that record. For some reason, out of all the like original run, well, there's only one run of the Jam, but like out of the like the 70s records? No, out of all of them, it's like the lowest rated.
Yeah.
Why? It fucking rules.
Yeah. This Is the Modern World is better than In the City.
I think I do think that too.
It's not as punk,
I guess, but neither's All Mod Cons, and people think that record rules and Setting Suns. Yeah. Yeah, I never understood that, why people were so hard on that record. Well, you know what? That kind of ties a little bit into our next album. So after all those tours, you know, they did the U.S. tour, they did the Mark Bolan tour, which was also Mark Bolan's final tour before he passed away.
And his record from that T-Rex record, Dandy in the Underground, is really good. That last T-Rex record is great.
So they were like, hey, everybody's doing two records this year. Let's go back in the studio. I'm sure Stiff was like, get in there, make us another hit. And so that comes to Music for Pleasure by The Damned. This is their second full-length album, released November 18th, 1977. So same date of the month, February 18th, November 18th. Released on Stiff Records as well. The personnel is Captain Sensible on bass and vocals, Rat Scabies on drums, Lou Edmonds on guitar, Brian James on guitar and vocals, and Dave Vanian on vocals. And the album was produced by Nick Mason. So for this record, they added a second guitarist with Lou Edmonds. Lou, I don't know where Lou came from, but Lou would later go on to play with the Mekons, Public Image Limited, and Billy Bragg. So Lou got a little bit of a career boost off this record. Nick Mason is the Nick Mason of Pink Floyd,
yeah,
which was a consolation prize because they tried to get Syd Barrett to produce this record. But because Syd Barrett was such a recluse, they couldn't get him. So they got Nick Mason. So the big thing about Music for Pleasure is it is shit upon by music historians, critics at the time, I guess, more so than now. But Music for Pleasure for the longest time has been referred to as kind of like the huge mistake of a record that ruined the band. This is their Into the Unknown. It has that reputation. Like,
it's
like,
it does. It's presented as being a weirder record than it is. My impression of it very early on was that it was their attempt at like an arty record. Maybe that's the Pink Floyd association, the saxophone it's on here. But I think that is not an accurate description.
No.
Machine Gun Etiquette is actually the art record.
Phantasmagoria is the art record.
Yeah, this is one of those records that this is something that I think of as there's a category of records that people said it was bad then and it gained a reputation and people repeated it.
Yeah.
Without listening to it. Or they let it color their impression of it. They went into it expecting it to be bad and then they found a record that was bad because it was not as good as the one before it. The great record before it, and even the great records that followed, depending on how you approached the Damned's discography. Because I kind of approached the Damned's discography with kind of picking and choosing the bigger records before listening to other records. And I haven't even listened to their whole discography. So
they're a band who has significant waves in their career. There's the first wave, which is the first two records before the breakup. There's the second wave, which would be the reunion records through Strawberries. Then you have the goth wave with Phantasmagoria and Anything. You have reunion wave, which you got your 90s 2000s albums where they kind of revert to the earlier punkier stuff, and then another reunion wave, the senior wave, I guess, with the, like, starting with like Evil Spirits and the new record, the farewell wave, I guess, is what we're at, because they did like a big tour. It was going to be like a farewell to the original lineup. So like, they're a band that has very distinct periods of their discography to look at. So, yeah, I take this record to be, yeah, it's not as good as Nee Nee Nee, or not Damn Damn Damn. But because I think it means they just didn't have the songs yet. They weren't ready. They weren't ready to go into the studio that soon. Either the label or just expectations pushed them into the studio before they had a record ready. And people were like, how dare you not release two classics back to back? This record is terrible. They have failed miserably. It didn't sell well. It was just this, like, the Sex Pistols just put out their perfect record in October and you released this. It's just this weird, like, this is trash. This is the worst thing they could have ever done. It is treated as like one of the worst albums of all time. And I listen to it and I go, it's fine, you guys. What are you all mad about?
It is one of the most unfairly sophomore slumped records. Like, people pan it so hard, and it's good. Like,
I would say it's a good album. It's better than anything. You ever listen to anything?
Right.
86 album? You know, it's better than Evil Spirits, I think. You know, the comeback. Yes, it's not the first record. Okay. But it's not a bad record. It's just not as good. History is wrong about this album and has been unfairly maligned. Now, that being said, it's not like an A-plus record. I think it's a B to B minus album. Like, it's got good songs on it. But again, it also, I don't have anything under a 3 on here. Everything's a 3. Like,
yeah. Yeah. This is revisiting it in less than a year, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it about the same, maybe even slightly more, because I could kind of pick out songs that stood out to me more on revisiting it. I think Problem Child's really good song. Mm-hmm. I think Stretcher Case is a really good song. I think, I want to say You Take My Money, maybe Your Eyes. And even songs like Don't Cry Wolf are good.
Yeah.
One Way Love is good.
Actually, I think One Way Love is my favorite song on here.
Yeah, One Way Love is actually really good.
I like One Way Love. I like Politics, which is like a harder rocking song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I like Don't Cry Wolf. The first half of the record is good, like really good. I think it falls off really bad on the second half. I think the back half of the album is just meh. I do not like Idiot Box. I think it's my least favorite song on here. But even then, I'm like, it's a 3.0. You know, it's not like,
which I've seen that song described as a knock on television, like it's a television parody.
It does feel very different. Yeah. I could see that, but that would then imply that they had a problem with television.
Maybe not. I mean, it may have just been like, we're going to do an arty song. I don't know. Maybe they thought television were overrated. I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows?
The Damned don't seem like they really have any substantial beef with anyone.
Yeah. Well, for whatever reason, they were kicked off the tour.
Yeah.
With the Pistols.
Yeah. That's the only probably significant beef they have. And rightfully so. Because I think they got... I think that really did hurt them. And probably contributed to the demise of this initial lineup.
Right. So the record was just dismissed by critics, which is the way I read it. Written on every single website. So either they're all plagiarizing each other, or no one has an original. No one actually knows what those critics said, because I can't find reviews for these records from the time period. I can only find 30 year anniversary reviews of the CD and almost no reviews about Music for Pleasure, period. I don't know if anyone else has ever run into this problem, but the internet is becoming very difficult to Google or anything. I can't find shit. Everything's an ad, or it's like to a web store where you can buy the record. And it's like, I want reviews. I put reviews in quotes, so it specifically brings me reviews, and it still brings me to Amazon, Walmart. Like, I can't find shit anymore on the internet. I don't know if there's just a different way to search or what, but SEO and like search engine, you know, data, metadata or whatever has really messed up how to find anything. Because I just want to find literal reviews from the time period, and I can't find shit. It's all contemporary or like modern reviews.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just because none of that stuff is digitized, or it's all behind paywalls now and you can't see them.
It's definitely hard to find. You definitely have to find books. You have to buy old magazines.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, a bummer. You have to be like a librarian.
Yeah.
To be able to really research things and have access. It's possible. And then this is just conjecture, but it's possible that it simply wasn't reviewed. It's possible that a lot of places were like passed on it, that had reviewed Damn Damn Damned were like, eh, whatever, this one's not good. We're not gonna publish a mid review, waste space in the paper in the magazine.
Yeah,
it could very well just have been overlooked. There's more than likely a less marketing put behind it as well, because it is such a quick follow-up.
Yeah, like, they were dropped from the label right after this came out. It didn't sell very well, which I wonder how much of that is just the bad reviews. And even Rat Scabies wasn't happy with the record. He didn't like how it came out, and he left the band.
Yeah.
And was replaced by John Moss, who would later play in Culture Club. And then the band would just break up after that. So it's like a whirlwind of they form in 76 and they're over by 78. Which, when did the Pistols break up? Is that the same time frame?
Did the Pistols not make it all the way to 79?
They may have, because that's where they toured the States, right? No, they broke up in 78 too.
78, okay.
They broke up in they started the tour in January. Oh, I think they even broke up in January.
Yeah, they didn't get very far into that tour. I do remember that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've seen that the band doesn't like this record. Rat Scabies doesn't like this record in particular, but I think the band in general doesn't like this record. They didn't like making this record. I mean, Brian leaves, doesn't come back for the next record. You know, when they break up, he leaves. And how quickly does he start Lords of the New Church? Not for a while. They didn't really do anything immediately after. One of the things I've read that they really hated about making this record was, so they wanted to record with Syd Barrett. They got Nick Mason, which, if you know anything about Syd Barrett, Nick Mason, any members of Pink Floyd, that makes more sense to record with Nick Mason than Syd. I guess they didn't know. He would have been pretty reclusive and private, and they wouldn't maybe not have even known. I would not think that Syd Barrett would be in really the mental state at this time to produce a record. Nick was working. Nick was making Pink Floyd records, making big records. It's kind of amazing that they even got him to do it.
It's an odd choice, right?
Yeah.
Like,
no, I can see they loved Syd era Pink Floyd. I can see them being heavily influenced by real early Pink Floyd. Certainly not what Pink Floyd was doing in 77
Pink Floyd was huge in 77, right?
They put out Animals.
Yeah.
In 77.
Yeah,
that but it would have been right before The Wall.
Yeah, we're between Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall. Like, Wish You Were Here was 75. You know, they were huge. They were a monster band at this point.
Yeah.
So it is, I guess, kind of shocking. He is the drummer and not necessarily like Roger Waters or David Gilmour. So he's probably got a little more time than those guys do. But even then, they're probably just touring nonstop. Nick's also the only permanent member from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Because David Gilmour joined in 67.
Yeah. But Nick being a successful, very successful musician, he made them take things over and over again. Like,
yeah.
One of the things that they hated about recording it was that he actually made them get it right in the studio. They couldn't just coast on speed and energy.
Yeah, there was one review I read that said, or a little comment that one of them said was that where they were hoping to record like at least 10 songs in the first day, he wants to just tune the drums for the first day.
Yeah, he wanted to find the sounds, make it sound good. That being said, production-wise, I don't think he really did anything notable.
I was going to say, production-wise, it doesn't sound very good. It's real thin. I don't know if it's just a matter of it hasn't been remastered the way Damn 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 has.
Yeah.
Or does much care put into remastering it. But even then, it just sounded really thin. Niccolo was a much better producer for their sound, too.
Yeah. And I mean, Niccolo is known for his production. Mm-hmm. Nick Mason is not really. Nick Mason is known for being in Pink Floyd.
If you look at the Wikipedia as a producer, it's the second and last record he ever produced was this one.
Yeah.
He did a Gong record before Robert Wyatt. Now, maybe if I go to actual Discogs and see what he's got done, but not known for his production work.
No.
Because, like, yeah, you don't even think of him as being, like, in Pink Floyd records, all that instrumental in, like, how those records sound. Like, that feels, that's Gilmore and Waters, you know?
Or the synth guy.
Right.
Who was that?
He produced some of his own albums.
Oh, right, yeah. Alan Parsons recorded Dark Side of the Moon. Richard Wright, that's the keyboardist, I can't remember.
Not the right producer for this record, but also at the same time...
It's not that he does a serviceable job. Like, it's fine, production-wise, it's on par with a lot of punk records from 77.
I was going to say, it is pretty similar recording quality of a lot of other 77 records. So, because really, if you even look at Nevermind the Bollocks, it doesn't sound that good, production-wise.
No, no. One of the, Nevermind the Bollocks is, like, you have Steve's tightness and being able to double his parts but like, you know, with Damn Damn Damn, like what you really benefit with Nick Lowe is someone who knows how to capture a clear, punchy sound and doesn't need anything else. It's, you know, it's really just good mic placement and a good ear at the mix desk, clean, dry, great sounding records. And this is early, you know, that's early Nick Lowe for Damn Damn Damn. It's a little raw. You know, they didn't have access to probably, you know, he didn't probably have like a better compressor he probably got later or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
But it is really upfront and in a way the guitars, really everything is really upfront and balanced really well on Damn Damn Damned in a way that isn't on Music for Pleasure.
What do you think of the addition of a second guitarist?
So that's one of the things that I think is kind of just weird. It's kind of a question mark for me.
Yeah. Like, it's like a why? Why did you need a second guitarist?
Lou really adds nothing notable to the record. I think this record is a little weaker, partially because Brian wrote everything. I mean, Scabies gets some credits. Dave gets a credit on Your Eyes. Captain Sensible gets a credit on Idiot Box. But I think if they were bringing in another guitarist, why didn't they just have Captain Sensible play guitar?
Right? Why is... Yeah. Unless they were just thinking from a live perspective, like, well, the captain's our bass player.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's like, I guess they're like, well, if we're going to have a second guitarist, we might as well have the second guitarist on the record.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can see it as being... A lot of the complaints I read said that, like, they went psych on this album. And I'm just like, there's like a little psych guitar on Alone.
Yeah.
But that song is very Stoogey.
Yeah.
And then maybe like that kind of noodling on Idiot Box, but that could have been Sensible even on that song. I mean, there's some like guitar slide type stuff on One Way Love. The only thing I could see that Lou is maybe contributing is maybe a different... some different kind of riffs. Like, I do think that Politics is bigger and harder rocking than most songs that they've written so far.
Yeah.
But not to the point where I'm like, this is now a psych record, you know?
There's not a substantial enough change in the style of guitar playing. There's still those classic Brian James riffs. I think that what this record lacks is it lacks Captain Sensible's licks. Like, his... Because... There's really not there's just not such a noticeable change that, you know, the second guitarist doesn't do anything here that if Captain Sensible had been the one, this might have been a good record. This might have been a well-received record because he switches to guitar on Machine Gun Etiquette and it's phenomenal. You don't miss Brian on Machine Gun Etiquette because Captain Sensible's a an amazing guitar player
yeah.
with like some classic all time riffs. So why didn't they just have him move over and go ahead and get Algie Ward on bass? I don't know. But, you know, I can see they were just like, we have momentum and there's this other person that we already know that's touring with us or going to be playing with us. So
does Brian ever come back? I think I read something that said he came back for a tour, but he's never on any records, is he? That is like the big what if. What if we'd had the Captain and Brian? Okay, we do. We do from June to December of 89. It's a tour, though. It's not a record.
Yeah.
It would have been cool. They did a single, Prokhiev, in 1991. And actually, it's credited as Vanian and James only. They have the writing. Yeah. It is only Dave Vanian on vocals and Brian James on guitar and sound effects. So that's probably not even like a real song. So that's the only time we've never had a Scabies or not Scabies. We've never had a Brian James and Captain Sensible record where they're both playing guitar.
Yeah. Missed opportunity.
Yeah. What's the best lineup to you of the Damned?
I mean, Machine Gun Etiquette is my favorite record. The most important factors, though, being Dave and Captain Sensible and Rat Scabies. I don't think Algie Ward really stands out as a bass player. I mean, I guess if bass playing is important, really important to you in Damned records, then it's the first album lineup. Because I do think Captain Sensible does something as a bass player that really no one else in Damned ever really does.
I think my favorite lineup is the one with Paul Gray on bass, because he's on the Black Album and Strawberries, because he takes Algie Ward's spot. But then after that, Paul Gray leaves. Brian Merrick takes over bass, and then Captain Sensible leaves, and then Roman Jug takes over guitars.
Yeah.
But then Sensible comes back for Final Damnation, but isn't Final Damnation, that's a live record. Yeah. This might be the best lineup then. Like the classic, the first two records. I don't know. Sensible on guitar, it just matters on how much you like Sensible versus Brian's guitar playing.
I think I probably get more mileage out of Captain Sensible's guitar playing.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that Brian has as many significant riffs on this record, on Music for Pleasure.
Yeah.
I think he kind of burned through a lot of his ideas too quickly.
Yeah.
And Lou doesn't really make up the difference.
I guess you got to go listen to Lords of the New Church to kind of see what Brian's doing.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, Lords of the New Church have never really stood out to me that much.
Yeah.
They don't really hook me.
Yeah, after this record comes out, Rat Scabies leaves, band breaks up, they reunite later in 79 without Brian. I wonder if there was bad blood there, or maybe he just didn't want to do it. But then he turns around and does Lords of the New Church. So, I don't know. Or maybe he was just like, well, it's just going to be more of the same, and that's why he didn't do it. Because, yeah, switching Captain Sensible to guitar is the thing that saves the Damned and makes them viable outside of the historic first record, you know, and they kind of letting Dave really let go, because Dave's on this record and he's here and he's singing on every song, but like I don't get any like really standout performances from anybody on here. Like I feel like Rat Scabies doesn't play as fast as he normally does. Dave doesn't sound as cool or as big as he does. I don't know, it just nobody really feels like their best here.
James does go on to play, in 79, he plays in Iggy Pop's touring band.
Okay. So Oh, did I read that and just forget it that he was unavailable and that's why he wasn't in the... That might have been it. If he's busy playing with Iggy Pop, you're like, I don't need you guys. Our last record tanked. I mean, yeah, if you're on tour with Iggy Pop, you're not going to be like, I got to quit touring with you, Jim. I need to go back to my band where our record flopped and we got kicked off our label.
He does show up on the Saints 82 album Out in the Jungle.
Okay.
And then, yeah, so Lords of the New Church runs kind of like 82 to 89.
The Saints just become a band for hire, though, after a period.
Yeah.
After the first couple records, right? I guess one of the things that's kind of special about The Damned is, are they the only band from the original wave of UK punk that's still a thing? Well, okay, Stiff Little Fingers are still a band touring.
Yeah.
They have put albums out in the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. I guess the Buzzcocks are there too, but didn't the Buzzcocks, like, they have a pretty big gap in their discography. They, like, stopped in the 80s and then come back in the 90s. But Stiff Little Fingers had a gap. The Damned have less substantial gaps, I guess. Their biggest gap, I think, is in the 90s.
Yeah, Wire had a little gap in the 80s.
Yeah.
And they changed so significantly.
Yeah. And I don't consider really Wire a original 77 punk, even though Pink Flag came out. But
77.
Yeah.
But.
And there's ones who've done stuff, like, since then. I don't count the Ramones because they're American and predate. The Clash just stopped and never came back.
Yeah. I mean,
Motorhead, but they're also a different thing, too, really. The Stranglers.
Yeah, even they didn't go. Didn't they break up in the 80s?
Let's see. They have. No, their biggest gap is from 2006 to 2012. Then 2012 to 2021. But
they definitely have a major lineup change at some point. I want to say there's a significant member that leaves in the 80s.
Yeah. The Jam just stop.
Yeah. Hard stop.
Because Paul's a jerk. No reason. And won't do anything with those guys. God, he's such a jerk. Why won't he do it? The Saints just become the Chris Bailey show after.
Yeah, pretty
mid-80s.
Yeah, early in the 80s.
I guess the Stranglers probably are like the closest to a nonstop contemporary to the Damned.
UK subs don't have a single until 78.
Yeah. Though, yeah, that's right. They don't even have a single then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they would be considered just because they, like, have yet to stop putting out records.
The sheer 23 albums that they've put out. They got three letters left. Do you think they'll do it?
I thought they did hit it. Do we have any? Susie hasn't even really been, like, a thing. She hasn't performed in a long time. Their last record was.
Yeah. The last Banshees records was early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
She's done other things. She's done a solo record. She's done another project. The Creatures, was that?
Yeah, that was with Budgie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that was kind of my reason for talking about Darkadelic when it came out. Because when I listened to it, I was like, this is solid. It's better than Evil Spirits. I did not like Evil Spirits. But I like that EP they put out 2 years ago a little better than this, than Darkadelic. But even then, I was just like, look, the Damned are still putting out records. And they're in their late 60s, you know, like, I think Captain Sizzle's like 68 and Dave's like 65, you know, they have a young guy playing with them who's probably like 40, but, and they still have, their keyboard player has been playing with them since the 90s. They were going to do that tour with Rad Scabies. I don't know if they ever actually wound up doing it, but yeah, it's one of those things where it's just like, they're still doing it. And they didn't really like, they never hurt their reputation. The most damaging thing to their reputation is Phantasmagoria. And even then, it's like, it's a good record. It's just completely different from what they were doing. So, like, yeah. They're a band that's kind of always, their most damaging reputation record is Music for Pleasure. It's the one where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they released it. I don't know.
Which doesn't even make sense, because when you listen to it, like, yeah, it's fine. Why wouldn't they release it? They should have waited.
I think they should have waited till they had more songs written.
Yeah.
But that's not what was happening at the time. You're trying to capitalize on trends, but because if you didn't, you would be the adverts who would only do one more record, or if you'd be the boys, you know. But also, I don't think that's fair, because Sensible and Vanian were, they very much have been like, oh, we want to be career musicians. Like, this is what we want to do for the rest of our lives. You know, Sensible goes off and does his own weirdo side project that's unlistenable. But still, like, they were clearly like, oh, we're going to keep trying to make this work over and over and over again. So, and I feel like they don't get respect, especially from the 77 UK punk contingent, who that's the only punk they've ever cared about.
Yeah. What are the ratings numbers wise? Damn Damn Damned has 48,000 or 4,800 ratings. Music for Pleasure has 900 ratings in comparison. Machine Gun Etiquette does have 3,400 ratings, but then everything else is like thousands.
Yeah, the next three are 1,000. Their least listened to, it's not even a real record, Sessions of the Damned for 93. Yeah, it's their least listened to. But as far as actual albums, Darkadelic has the least amount, and that just came out like 2 weeks ago. So, but rating, like number-wise, anything's the lowest rated album. Well, Not of This Earth is actually the lowest rated album. That's a 2.77. Is that a record or is that a live album? That record seems to have a weird history, so I don't know if that even really would, you would even count that one.
That one was started as Ratscabies' new band.
But then he got Dave to join.
He got Dave, so they decided to keep the name. So kind of a weird one.
Yeah, I wouldn't call that one. Though Brian James has a writing credit on there.
It's never credited. Prokofiev is on that record too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. It's still the second lowest rated album. And it's not. It's not the second. Well, I guess it might still be the second worst record, though. Like, really, let's say, okay, it's not as bad as everybody acted like it was. Like, people act like it was the worst thing to ever happen. But even still, it's not, compared to the rest of their discography, it's not one of their better. Now, to be fair, I haven't listened to Who's So Paranoid and Grave Disorder. But I have listened to Evil Spirits and Anything. So I would put those below this one. I would need to listen to those later albums to see. But if we just look at the original run, let's exclude Reunion Records, it might be the second worst original record.
Yeah.
So there is something to be said about, like, oh, I just wasn't very good, or it just wasn't anything.
Well, it could have been better.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my takeaway is, yeah, it could have been better, but it's still good.
And it could have been a lot worse. And it's talked about like it is a lot worse.
Yeah.
And I think it's just unfairly, I think it's as good as any of the other also ran UK punk records. It's as good as that Outsiders record and that Eater record, maybe even better in places, you know. I probably like this better than any Ian Drury record, you know. I guarantee I like it better than Public Image Limited.
Yeah, I like it more than the Stranglers records.
Yeah.
Well, if you have never listened to this record, listen to it. Make up your mind.
Yeah.
And tell us, because I don't think enough people have listened to it. I think too many people have avoided this record because it's had such a bad reputation for so long that people just straight up skip it.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think it's worth checking out and forming your own opinion on it for sure. It's not as bad as history has made it out to be.
Yeah. I mean, if 77 is this really important year for punk, there's less than 40 albums from 77 that I think you should listen to.
Yeah,
and this is one of them. You should listen to it.
And for all the importance heaped on 77 for the most, one of the most important years for punk, 78 is better. There's just better music in 78, you know, overall. It's because in 77 everybody was doing the same thing for the most part, or trying to do the same thing. 77 is important for making it an explosion of new bands and kind of cementing it as a genre. Because otherwise it would just be viewed as just like a little blip of a thing that happened. And I think punk does, for all the importance and the originality of the Ramones and the Stooges and the MC5 for being the bands who actually invented the sound of punk music, I don't think it becomes a full-fledged genre without the UK punk explosion. There could be something that would have happened in the US, but I also don't think the American hardcore boom happens if the UK punk explosion doesn't happen. Something else might have taken its place and been a different thing entirely, but 77 punk is essential for the way punk grew. So,
yeah.
Otherwise, it would have just been like, look at these weirdo garage bands. Like, that would have been it with the Stooges and MC5, you know. Violent Underground? Velvet Underground? Not really a punk band.
No.
They had a punk ethos and philosophy in an era where you weren't really supposed to release music that way, but sonically, not punk. So that's why I always say the inventors of punk. Is it the MC5? They predate the Stooges. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I say this. If you watch live footage of MC5 in like 69, 70, that's a punk band.
Yeah.
Full stop, punk band. Like, incredible to watch.
I think, yeah.
That's where your attitude comes from. That's where your, like, all-out energy comes from.
And then I guess the Ramones are the first one you just call a punk band. The first one to get called punk. So,
yeah.
You need all three. You need all four. You need the MC5. You need the Stooges. You need the Ramones. And you need the Sex Pistols. And then everything else blooms from that. So, yeah. Worth pointing. But the Damned are better than the Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
By a mile. Now, it's a little unfair because they put out way more music, but
if you could just compare the first albums.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that will do it. Our first attempt at a double LP. It's our double LP episode, our king size special.
Yeah, there's not a lot of opportunities to do that. Most of them actually happen in 77. So
yeah, that would be fun. Like, if maybe we should try and like hunt down future possibilities. We could do the two Everclear albums that came out the same year. We could do those two Coheed records.
Yeah.
The Aftermans. Man, that now I'm going to do a deep dive on that. I'm going to put together a list 2 in 1 year. Though technically those Coheed records came out in different years, but it was within a year span.
So yeah.
They count. All right. Anorexia and Nervosa by Showbread. Same day, double, two album. They should just package them as one.
Lucky but. Town and Human Touch by Bruce Springsteen. I mean, yeah.
Who's gonna do?
There's so many bands that put out records. I mean, yeah. Artists used to put out records all the time.
What's the old line? We used to be a society. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed this extra long episode where we talk about both records. And hope you like The Damned. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. iTunes, Spotify. And we will talk to you next week.
To order Punk, call the number on your screen. Rush delivery is available. Remember, this special offer is not sold in stores.